get right with it. I'd like to welcome, and I'm very honored to have Andrew Johnson out of the UK. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, fine. Would you give us a short bio before we get started here?
Certainly, yeah. I regard myself as a pretty ordinary person, really. You know, hopefully I can consider myself reasonably well-educated. I went to university and did a degree in computer science and physics, which finished quite a few years ago. And then I sort of progressed from there into the field of what's known as software engineering, which is sort of computer programming, along with a bit of actually designing the program rather than just, you know, sort of writing a program that somebody else gives you to write. You know, and you have to sort of develop these programs and then test them and find the errors, and sometimes you have to find the errors in other people's programs, and you know, it gets to be quite a complicated procedure. That work sort of has taken me around the world a bit, and I've traveled to Japan and South Korea and some places in Europe, and been to Canada 2 or 3 times, States a couple of times over the last sort of 20 odd years. Also got involved in education, and I worked full time for a couple of years doing sort of tutoring and lecturing at a sort of college for adult education. That was in computing subjects and a little bit of maths, fairly low level maths, so really. And currently I work part time for the Open University, which is a UK organisation which does correspondence courses, and you know, associated with that tutoring, I also work with disabled students in assessing them for equipment for access to higher education. So really, you know, my background in terms of 9/11 and that sort of thing, it's, I don't come from a political background, I don't come from a military background, I don't come from a, you know, what I call a strongly scientific background, although because of the software engineering, you know, that's a very analytical process, and you have to keep your wits about you, and you know, and really work hard at analysis to find problems. Sometimes, you know, working for several days just to find one little particular problem, for example. So I feel that those sorts of activities, you know, help in the detective work that's involved in 9/11. And really, it was because I was associated with the Open University that I ended up getting involved in this Scholars for 9/11 Truth Group, which was basically at the end of 2005, by which time I'd already, you know, realised the official story of 9/11 was false. You know, that's really how I got involved, through the Scholars for 9/11 Truth Group. And through that group, I came into contact with two people. Initially, one was Professor Stephen E. Jones, and the other was Professor Jim Fetzer. And I, of course, had assumed that these were, you know, legitimate investigators into the 9/11 mystery, if we can call it that, and that they were looking for the truth, as I was. And this was around the time, you know, you mentioned in the introduction there about this idea of this thermite. This was being put out by Stephen E. Jones. And I kind of got hooked into that, and I thought, well, you know, this guy's academically is above where I am. You know, he's a tenured professor at Brigham Young University. He presumably knows what he's doing, and he's written this paper about the World Trade Center being destroyed with the use of thermite. It must be, you know, it must basically be valid. It can't just be total rubbish, you know. Uh-huh. And so I was essentially taken in by this, and I actually went as far as printing copies of this paper as it was. It's morphed a bit since the version that I sort of initially came into contact with. It's actually changed quite a bit since then. I essentially helped promote this among 9/11 researchers that I was in contact with, and other people as well. And I sent this thing to a few people, and you know, left it in sort of these meetings that were done in London and this sort of thing. But then I came to realize that actually when you start to look at some of the basic evidence, the thermite doesn't actually explain very much at all. And you ultimately end up with something which is, you know, doesn't really explain any more evidence than the official story does. And I got into contact with the guest that you had on last week, Dr. Judy Wood, over a period of time. And I'd seen how she was being attacked for the sort of evidence that she was posting. And, you know, my senses started to go crazy then, really, because I realized that I was seeing, you know, she was being attacked in the same way that other people I knew were being attacked in other fields of research that I've been involved with, which you can look at on my website, checktheevidence.com. There's a lot of stuff on there. And it's all free content. There's no, you know, I don't charge for anything. I distribute DVDs at cost price, because I can, you know, I don't want to make any money from this. So, you know, eventually got in touch with Dr. Wood, and she was investigating the directed energy weapons evidence. And at the time I got in touch with her, she'd basically concluded that there was some type of directed energy weapon that destroyed most of the World Trade Center. And when I saw the pictures that she's collected, I was pretty amazed, because there were a fair number that I'd never seen before. And, you know, she was pointing out some very simple things, such as the primary one being the steel turning to dust. You know, we've actually just been on a fringe UK TV program. This was on Thursday. And this is really the sort of first time that this evidence has been discussed on television. I think possibly anywhere in the world. There might have been some PBS channels that have carried some of the DVDs that we've previously made. I'm not sure. But going back to the steel turning to dust, this was, to me, the wake-up call for the thermite not being a valid story, because the problem is, once you realize that the steel has turned to dust, you have to explain what can do that. And the substance which is known as thermite has now taken on this almost magical set of properties, according to what you read on the internet and what people put in emails. They seem to think it can be an explosive, which is something that blows things apart, obviously. I don't need to explain that. And an incendiary, which is something that burns things, you know, in a very high temperature. And actually, thermite normally is used for welding. It's actually used for welding rails on a railway track together, for example, because what you do is you set some thermite going, and the metal will melt. And then if you arrange, you know, your equipment properly, when it cools, then the metal will fuse together. And the evidence for thermite centered around this piece of film that Steve Jones had got, and it was some molten metal, apparently dripping from one of the towers. I can't remember whether it was the North Tower or the South Tower, which was filmed by somebody. And this is a small amount. Maybe you're talking, I don't know, you know, maybe a couple of gallons or something like that. It wasn't a huge lot. And he claimed that this was the thermite reaction going, and the steel was melting, and it was forming molten iron, and it was dropping down. So he had just this... I think he claims there are four films of this. I think there's only one which is particularly clear. And I got involved with editing this clip together originally until I found out what Dr. Wood had put together. And so the arguments began to rage over this thermite, but it basically comes down to a very simple point. Did the steel in the World Trade Center turn to dust, or didn't it? That's what the basic point of evidence that you can go and inspect for yourself and make your own decision. I know that it turned to dust because I've seen the video clips and I've seen the pictures of the aftermath, and there is almost no debris left. An incendiary cannot do that. An explosive cannot do that. We're looking at something that is neither an incendiary nor an explosive. How else can we refute that it was thermite? Well, we also look at the videos of the towers as a whole again, not just the justification process, but the actual, you know, what's going on during that process. Are there any bright flashes of light associated with an explosion? The answer is no. Is there any large volume of heat coming out? The answer is no. So, are there any loud explosions going off actually as the towers are coming down? Now, we've heard reports of people being in the towers and hearing explosions and then coming out of the towers. But if you go and look at the news videos again, do you hear loud explosions as the towers are actually turning to dust and coming down? The answer is no, you don't. So those basic points of evidence alone, regardless of whether you want to, you know, go into the directed energy weapon scenario too deeply, they refute the idea that it was anything conventional. It wasn't anything that was a nuclear bomb. It wasn't thermite. It wasn't RDX. It wasn't fluoride, as Sophia Smallstorm has proposed. It was none of those things. We're looking at some type of new technology. And I think Dr. Wood realized that, and I think she'll say this herself, pretty early on. You know, I mean, she thought it was some kind of joke, these videos that were being played on 9/11. And of course, everyone was hooked into this, you know, the official story. And then along comes a thermite to explain the disappearance of the steel, and people were taken in by it, and they're still being taken in by it now. And yet, the evidence does in no way supports the use of thermite, you know, in this process. And what else can we say about thermite? We can say some other very simple things. We can say, well, what actually is thermite? The number of people, you know, I went to an event last weekend in the UK where I was speaking, and I was telling people about the directed energy weapons and 9/11. No one had heard of it. No one had heard of it. Everyone had heard of thermite. So I asked them what thermite actually was. About half of them knew that it was something to do with, you know, an incendiary or something, but they didn't know what the chemical components were. The chemical components of thermite are iron oxide and aluminium powder. And we can talk more about that after the break, because I can hear the music.
Yeah, great. Well, you heard that. Great. That's absolutely astounding. Amazing. Getting the facts and evidence. Hang on, folks. Back in a minute. Okay, we're back here. We have Andrew Johnson out of the UK and 911, and he's explaining facts and about thermite and what thermite is. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sure. Thanks, Ralph. Yeah. So basically, this, you know, deal with the thermite, which we have to talk about because it has become, to me, you know, I know it sounds a bit of a strange expression, but it's like a global mind control program. That's been my experience with this. But to go back to the actual what it is, thermite is a substance which is iron oxide and aluminium powder. You can go and look up the chemical formula, you know, in the appropriate place. And if people want to check what I'm saying and go into more detail about why this thermite story is, you know, totally bogus, really, I've created a dedicated blog, and it's called 911911. thermitefree.blogspot.com. Some of that is information I've sort of reposted from my website. I've just collected it all together because it relates to the thermite and covers some of these things you know, I've just been talking about. So the point about it being aluminium and iron oxide is this. If you go and look at how the World Trade Center was constructed, you'll see that the exterior of the building was made of an aluminium alloy. Okay, so that's what gave it its shiny, you know, silvery exterior appearance. Now, as you will also see in the construction details, it had 236 exterior columns and it had 47 interior steel columns. Now, what happens to steel if it's left for 30 years exposed to the air and water vapor? Would anybody like to guess?
Well, I would think that eventually it would turn into iron oxide, but steel isn't is more resistant to that than in regular iron, of course.
Of course, correct. So you are going to get, over that length of time, over a period of 30 years, which it was since the towers were constructed before they were destroyed, you will get some rust, which is iron oxide. So for these people that claim to have written a scientific paper saying that they found active thermitic materials in the dust from the World Trade Center, what does that actually mean? Well, what does active thermitic materials mean? Well, of my understanding, and I think they say something like this in this supposedly scientific paper, is unreacted thermite. It's still active, so it's ready to react. Again, what are the components of thermite? Iron oxide and aluminium. So what the paper actually says is, to me, the remains of the World Trade Center dust were found in the World Trade Center dust. In other words, there was the components of thermite already in the dust anyway, regardless of whether there had been any extra planted to actually do any of the destruction. So really, it's actually a very, you know, very good cover story, because you, in a sense, you can't prove it wrong. you know, because the materials of thermite were already present in the natural construction of the towers, you can't actually say that there was no thermite in the destruction of the World Trade Center, because there was, but it was actually what was already there in the construction of the towers. So, you know, this gives you a bit of a problem as how you would differentiate between the iron oxide and the aluminium powder that was caused by the dustification of the towers, and any that may have been actually in thermite. There would probably be very little way to actually distinguish between that. But even if you go back to that and say, oh yes, well, you know, how can you say, Andrew, you know, that there wasn't any thermite? But you just go back to the previous points that I've made, that even if thermite was, you know, you try and argue that thermite was put there, it's not consistent with what was actually seen. We'll repeat those points again. There were no bright flashes seen as the tower came down. There were no explosions that were visible as the towers came down. And there was no heat. You know, if we look at the amount of thermite that would have been needed to take those towers and make them disappear, and they wouldn't have disappeared in that way anyway, but let's just suppose for the sake of argument it did, the heat generated would have been colossal. And we have this dust cloud which comes out. Again, you can go and watch the videos. The cloud travels maybe 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour, something like that, maybe less. We have people running down the street away from the cloud. The cloud catches up with them. You know, I've seen at least a couple of films where people are filming this dust cloud and they're surrounded by it. It engulfs them. They shelter under a vehicle. The actual light on the camera comes on, you know, that's used in darkness because it gets so dark. And then the guy gets up and walks away. He's not burned. His clothes are not burned off. His skin's not burned off. The witnesses all report that the cloud was either the same temperature or it was maybe slightly warmer, and some actually reported it's slightly cooler than the surrounding air. So this implies even that the air energy was taken out of the environment to actually destroy the materials, not that the energy was coming out of the materials, you know, in a hot reaction. Mm-hmm. So all of the evidence points to a new type of process, one which doesn't use heat. Dr. Wood can, you know, just pick another piece of evidence out of the air. Dr. Wood's got this very interesting picture that she calls West Lake. It's a huge lake of water on West Street, which was the result of a burst water main. And, you know, this was, I think, might have even been on 9/11, or maybe it was the day after. This huge pool of water, and yet they're claiming that there was these molten metal in the basements. So if you've got molten metal in the basements and you've got this huge lake of water, you know, with some of it seeping down into the basements, why aren't you seeing these huge clouds of steam and steam explosions coming out? Just doesn't add up at all. So again, you can look at all this evidence, and then you can carry on. You know, we can talk about the energy effects and that sort of thing maybe in a bit, but I'd also like to talk again after the break about this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which has been getting a lot of press recently.
Oh, great, because that's what I want to have you, because you're the most familiar with this, and we need to get this evidence out, the real facts, because this thermite and this other stuff is just taking over out here.
Because you can handle the truth.
Well, we're back from break here and talking about 911 with facts with Andrew Johnson out of the UK. And I had looked at a lot of these videos, and what is impressive that somebody out of academia such as Andrew Johnson and Dr. Judy Wood have got involved, because we can look at these facts, but when people are more highly trained or research in these areas, and we get enlightened more. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thanks. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's worth also looking at the background to who's presenting the thermite evidence and the way it's being kind of, you know, put out there and what's being done with it. We have to look at those things. And for those listeners that don't already know or weren't listening last week, you know, actions speak louder than words. And, of course, what Dr. Judy Wood did, once she had sort of collected the evidence together and got it into a sufficiently kind of, you know, how can I put it? Once she built a case with the evidence that she felt was sufficiently strong, she decided to confront NIST with that evidence. And I think perhaps you will have described that last week. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to listen to last week's broadcast, but so I don't want to recover, you know, re-go over old ground. But she she sort of went to an attorney, and she took the evidence and she challenged NIST with it.
NIST, for the listeners, NIST.
Sure. NIST is the National Institute for Standards in Technology, okay. And it's a government agency which kind of, you know, sets various standards for industry and this sort of thing. They've got the atomic clock there, and they sort of keep the official U.S. time, I think, is one of the things they do.
Okay.
And they wrote 10,000 pages of reports about the World Trade Center destruction, which they published in 2005, which was coincidentally about a month before this Stephen E. Jones character came onto the scene, and started this thermite story. So the timing of that was also quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, probably just worth dwelling on Stephen E. Jones for a minute. We did mention this the last time I came on in October, but Stephen E. Jones is a very interesting character in the way he's connected into this picture, because when you start to look at the energy question in relation to 9/11 and how it was done, you come out with some very, very interesting links. For example, the fact that Stephen E. Jones worked for Los Alamos National Laboratories, and he was also done work for the Department of Energy. And in fact, you can watch a video called Heavy Watergate, which was broadcast in the year 2000. So this is 5 years before he came onto the scene of 9/11 research. And in that video, you will see a short clip mentioning Stephen E. Jones and how he published a paper on what is called muon-catalyzed cold fusion, which is a type of nuclear fusion process which he had apparently done research into. And this was apparently a way of actually getting a small amount of energy out of a nuclear reaction in a sort of simple experiment, or fairly simple experiment. Now, there were two other chemists, not physicists, chemists called Pons and Fleischmann. And in 1989, they stunned the world with their experiment on cold fusion. And when they published their results at a press conference, because Stephen E. Jones had published this paper the day before, they were going to wait to publish their results, but somehow they were encouraged to publish their results at a press conference rather than at a scientific conference. And Pons and Fleischmann basically were saying, well, look, we can get energy out of nothing, we think, with this process. In other words, we can put 100 watts into this process and get 500 watts of energy out. And of course, the scientific world went absolutely crazy at this idea, because that breaks the, second law of thermodynamics. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head without checking. But this breaks the laws of physics. So they were really laid into, and there was a very strong effort to discredit them. And Stephen E. Jones was involved in this effort, actually. And Dr. Eugene Malov, who was another, he was actually a science writer at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he got involved in documenting the cold fusion, affair, really. And he wrote this Pulitzer Prize, it was either nominated for a Pulitzer Prize book in 1991, and it's called Fire from Ice. And in this book, which I have a copy of and I've read it, Stephen E. Jones is mentioned on 100 pages. And Stephen E. Jones didn't say cold fusion wasn't real, just like he doesn't say the official story of 9/11 is true. But what he did say is that you would never get any useful energy out of a cold fusion process. You know, it was only of sort of academic interest, and it was of no practical value. That's essentially what he said. I'm not quoting him verbatim, but that's what was the position that he maintained over the years. So he was able to act as a kind of, you know, shepherd in the academic community for all those people who wanted to say, no, you know, we can't be having this energy from nowhere business. You know, we've got to stick to fossil fuels and hot fusion, because the hot fusion program is worth billions. You know, I don't know how much they've spent on it now, probably $100 billion over the years, probably more. Because of the hot fusion program uses a completely different and very, very complicated process.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Jones was really, I think, there to protect the interests of the hot fusion program and stop us from realizing that basically, as Tesla found, energy is everywhere and it's radiant energy, and we can get as much energy as we need from the environment without burning any fossil fuel, without damaging the environment. We just need the right equipment to do it. And that's what Tesla had worked on, and that's what JP Morgan ended up pulling the funding from Tesla's project for what's called radiant energy and this sort of thing. So people can read about that separately. So we've got the energy connection through Stephen E. Jones, through Eugene Malov, who ended up dead in 2004, just before he was due to go and do a presentation towards, I think, a congressional committee about free energy devices. And this was about how long? Just over a year before Steve Jones came onto the scene of 9/11 research that Malov was dead. And then, of course, we have the connection, as I think I might have mentioned before, it's worth mentioning it again to remind people. Dr. Judy Wood's student was called Michael Zabur, and they were doing an experiment, or not even an experiment, but a demonstration, to essentially show that what Stephen E. Jones was saying about molten aluminium, or aluminium as you would say, was false. Stephen E. Jones claimed that molten aluminium was silvery at all temperatures under daylight conditions. In other words, if you heat aluminium up, it will melt, and it will always stay silvery in appearance in daylight conditions. This is false. If you heat up aluminium enough, it will glow orange. And they needed the hot metal, we think, to cover up the energy effects of this Hutchison effect technology, which we've sort of, you know, isolated as being the main technology that was used in the destruction of the towers. So that was the energy connection. And then Michael Zabur, just after, you know, his work with Dr. Wood posting this this demonstration, he was found dead. He was actually shot in a mugging incident in his hometown in the presence of his mother.
Wow.
And the killer was never, I don't think the killer's been properly, well, no, the killer, if you go and look at the killer's kind of, you know, confession, it's, and you go and check that out, it's very strange. They did apparently catch somebody and they confessed, but it's all very strange. Malov's murderer, I don't think, was ever found. I don't think they ever found him. Mm-hmm. So we've got these two very suspicious deaths in relation to the energy issue. But going back to the thermite issue, I'd like to mention this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth group, because they've been heralded with this press conference, and a lot of people have been sending around this press conference that they did. I think they've had a two or three around the world or something, and it's very interesting to note when Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth seemed to appear, and it was actually only a couple of weeks after Dr. Judy Wood filed her action against NIST, or filed the request for correction, I should say, to NIST, which was to notify them that their report was fraudulent. So right around that time, we have this new group comes on the scene, headed up by this Richard Gaze character, who claims to be an architect, but apparently I don't think he really is an architect. I think he's some type of developer. Yeah, I think he's got some basic experience in architecture, but I don't think it's like structural engineering or that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And he's been all around the world talking about thermite and stuff like that. But what they also did, Dr. Wood's request for correction included all the directed energy weapon evidence and why, you know, the towers were turned to dust and all that evidence, and that there was no heat involved or relatively little. And then, Richard Gage and his group come along, and they submit an RFC to NIST 3 weeks after Dr. Wood does. And then this RFC doesn't mention thermite. There's no reference to thermite, the word thermite, in it. There is a link to this Stephen E. Jones paper, but no paragraphs from this paper are quoted in the RFC, and none of Stephen E. Jones's thermite research, which he says is conclusive, is quoted in the RFC. So if you're trying to make a legal submission based on the evidence which you think is most convincing and most powerful and compelling and truthful and correct, then why do you exclude it from the document that you're actually submitting as the basis for your challenge to the government body? Why are you going to exclude it? So this is yet another reason I've put this all onto this blog that I mentioned, 911thermitefree.blogspot.com. That's all on there, and you can go and look at the RFC, you can download their document, you can search for the word thermite, and you'll find it in a URL, you know, an internet link reference, but you won't find any other reference to it in the RFC. In the appeal, they submitted an appeal document about, I think, about 6-7 weeks later or something, maybe a bit later. They did mention thermite in the appeal document, but this referred to a 1996 study done by some fire safety group. It didn't refer to Stephen E. Jones's 9/11 paper about the destruction of the World Trade Center. So again, they had two opportunities to refer to their thermite research in the official challenges that they were making, and they passed. Essentially, they passed on those opportunities. So why would they do that? You know, if it's factual and it's honest and it's correct, why are you going to leave it out? Why are you going to leave that out of a document?
Because it does not stand.
Correct. And also there is this other aspect that if you submit false information to a government agency as part of a legal challenge, then you can be, you know, essentially eventually done for treason. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's that aspect to it. This is called the Smith-Mundt Act, I believe, is in law. So, you know, really we've got all the indicators when you study them. You know, I mean, the thermite story is like the official story. You look at the surface of it and it looks credible. You think, yeah, you know, planes hit buildings, they fell down. Yeah, it looks credible. Thermite is hot, you know, the steel disappeared. It must have burnt through the steel and it all fell down. It looks credible on the surface, but as soon as you start scratching away the veneer, you know, you realize that it really doesn't explain anything for the reasons that I've already outlined. So, you know, the other thing about this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth Group, they've been going around saying, oh, we need your signatures, we've got 1,000 members, you know, and then they say, well, we need Congress to do a study, we need somebody else to do a study, we need to have an independent investigation. Yeah, okay, great. But surely you've got all these architects and engineers in your group with this, you know, 100,000 years of expertise between them. Can't they produce their own independent report among the membership? You know, surely you've got the expertise within your own group. Let's see your report. Let's see your conclusions. Let's see it on the website, and let's see it put into something like a fraud case or some other type of legal challenge. Which, of course, I say this because this is exactly what Dr. Wood has done. She's done the investigation. She's packaged it into a legal document, which is a fraud case, including hundreds of pages of documentation. You know, I was involved in preparing some of these documents on the sidelines just to help out with a bit of, you know, a few man hours and that sort of thing. You know, we needed to prepare some lists and tables and things like that, and I helped out a bit with that. So, you know, we worked as, I think there were probably about 4 or 5 of us. We did, you know, Dr. Wood did the investigation. We helped package it a bit and, you know, just maybe do a bit of proofreading and this sort of thing. And we submitted it, and it went through all the appropriate channels, and it went into the court of the Southern District of New York. So if we can do it, why can't they do it? And why haven't they done it? You know, this Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth Group, it's been going since 2007. It's nearly 3 years old. And all they've done is they've got a website and they've got a petition, you know, and that's basically all they've done. And they're going around the world saying the official story of 9/11 is false and thermite did it, and that's all they're saying. They haven't really done anything else. So, you know, we can all stand in a line and go, you know, oh, you know, 3 cheers for Richard Gage doing a good job, you know, challenging the official story and waking people up. And what's he waking people up to? A new false story. That's what he's waking people up to. And you can prove it yourself in 5 minutes just by looking at the evidence. You don't need to take my word for it. I mean, who is this guy from the UK, you know, who's coming out with all this nonsense? No, go and look at it for yourself. You know, just look at the basic facts. It's very, very simple once you actually distill it down to the basic facts. It's not difficult to understand. And then people say things like, oh, you know, Andrew, this directed energy stuff, it's pretty far out stuff, you know. I mean, people are not really going to believe it. And so you shouldn't really be talking about it because it's going to frighten people, you know. And I say to them, well, look, But it's the truth. If you look at the evidence, this is the only thing that explains the evidence. So if you want to have a truth movement, you know, are you going to tell people the truth as you see it and show them the evidence? And, or are you going to worry about whether it looks good or whether it looks popular or whether it looks believable? You know, you've got to actually look at the evidence and present the evidence. It doesn't matter how it, whether it looks far out or whether it looks popular or unpopular, or, you know, you've just got to present the evidence and explain it to people, which is all that we are able to do. And that's what we have been doing. You know, so that's basically the basic message here, is to go and look at the evidence and revisit what you already thought you knew. I had to do that because I was taken in by the thermite, and then I saw the new evidence and I realized that I'd been fooled, and I had to go back again, you know, swallow some humble pie. It was didn't taste nice, but I had to swallow it, go back, look at the evidence again, you know, turn a few pages back and work forward again. And, you know, we've seen now, after another sort of couple of years of study, we actually can identify what the technology was. We know what the technology was that destroyed the towers. We don't know, that doesn't mean to say we know exactly what the weapon is. We don't know who's got the weapon. We don't know who did it. We don't know who sanctioned it. We don't know where it was. We don't know what the input power was, if it had any input power. But we do know that it operated on the principle of field effects, which is where you can mix together different types of energy fields, which are generated from, say, something like a Tesla coil, or you could mix together, for example, microwave energy and radio frequency energy. And this is what John Hutchinson had been doing for the last 30 years. So this is where the evidence, you know, you go and check the basic evidence, you tie it all together, and then you can start to draw some much better and much more high quality conclusions.
Now, he's actually demonstrated some of these issues, and we'll hear the music. We'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned. Well, we're back here and get some astounding information with evidence here with Andrew Johnson. And we're going to get into some other questions I want to pose here. I want Andrew to continue on here. But I do have one question. Thermite, if it actually, when it exists, is it two separate components and then something triggers it, or is it actually chemically combined into one thing?
Yeah, I think basically it's actually fairly simple to make. You know, it's literally just two powders that you mix together in the right quantities. I don't know what exact quantities are required, but then you have to introduce a hot fuse. You know, you actually have to set the thermite going, and it does need a, because the problem is with aluminium, it forms a durable oxide coating, and you need a very hot temperature to actually, you know, break down the oxide coating initially, because aluminium is actually more reactive than magnesium, but it's got this very durable oxide coating. I remember this from my chemistry lessons many years ago. And so you do need a hot fuse to actually kick off the reaction. Once you get a bit of, you know, the thermite reaction, then obviously it's self-sustaining. So that's it. How, you know, that's another question. How did they get these hot fuses? You know, if you go and look at the thermite reaction, you can see YouTube videos, and you'll see this glowing, you know, really hot fuse going into the thing to set it off. And then, you know, the problem that people say to me is, oh, well, it wasn't the traditional thermite. Initially in 2005, it was just ordinary thermite. And Steve Jones said in a lecture, he said, oh, you know, carrying it in loads, you know, 10 people carrying in the 10 pounds in a pack over 3 days or 4 days or whatever he said. I can't remember the exact figures. He was suggesting it was carried into the towers in loads, but he didn't really say how it was set off. He did say other explosives would have been needed. Then the story started to change, because after that it became nanothermite. In other words, what you needed to do was you needed to grind up the aluminium powder and the iron oxide into very fine nano dust. And I think the argument for this was, you see, when you're talking about chemical reactions, it's the surface area, which, you know, the total surface area that is exposed to the, which, you know, dictates the speed of the reaction. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a very fine dust, it's going to react, you know, much, much more quickly than something in chunks, because the surface area, you know, surface area to volume ratio is much, much greater. So, you know, this military developed this, it was going to be super reactive, you know, and super an agent's history or an explosive. It could be either. So this solved all the problems with the original thermite theory. You know, so then it changed from thermite to nanothermite. And then I got a recording, I think, last year of Steve Jones on this radio program saying he thinks it was paint on thermite. So he was entertaining this possibility that, you know, somebody went into the towers and painted on the steel girders with thermite. There was still no real discussion of how you'd actually set the reaction going initially. You know, and then when Dr. Wood had sort of started pointing out these, what she called these toasted cars, you've got another lecture of Steve Jones saying that these cars were damaged by thermite which fell onto them. We came up with this sort of, you know, we came up, well, what they obviously did was we had the pigeons in New York City were all pre-wired with thermite, you know, and they flew over and they pooped on the towers, you know, and yeah. We were sort of doing things like, and then they pooped on the cars because they missed, you know, they missed the towers and flew down to FDR Drive and pooped there as well, you know. You know, so you literally get into these sort of ridiculous sort of scenarios with this thermite, you know, and then you look at the other evidence, such as the fire trucks, which again were parked some distance away with the engine blocks missing. Did they plant the thermite in the fire trucks too? You know,
beyond belief, isn't it? Unbelievable.
It is.
Well, I hear the music. We'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned, and we're going to get into some more of this and some questions. Back in a minute. Well, we're coming back here and have Andrew Johnson out of the UK. I'm very honored to have him explaining. I am shocked how positively their lies just propagate around the world here, and the truth is hidden. There's when I first looked into this, when I first became aware of this, is I looked at Dr. Judy Wood's stuff, and I said 80% of the building's been missing. That couldn't be. I saw all these DVDs, never brought it up. Steel is being justified. It just vanishes. I mean, it's like you would blow a dust storm. And I said there's a level 3 hurricane off of New York, and nobody wants to talk about it. We got 1,400 cars up to a half a mile away that have been toasted. Some of them, it's unbelievable the way part of it is and part of it isn't. And they're turned upside down. I said, how come I don't know about this stuff? And as soon as I got to that, I said, okay, well, I knew what I was being told wasn't true. And then you look at that picture that Dr. Judy Woods got an upcoming book here of this picture that was taken. It looks like a water fountain or a bubbler, I think she calls it. I just can't believe it. I mean, there's no way any explosive anything could do this. And then on top of that, this building came down at the speed of gravity, essentially. Totally impossible. And we have a magnetic interference in Alaska. How the heck did that happen? Anyway, Andrew, carry on.
Yeah, Ralph. Well, I think that's you know, a super sort of summary of some of the evidence, really. And you know, I think you've sort of highlighted the problem in terms of when you see that evidence and you begin to take it in, it takes you onto a whole new level, really. And I think, you know, though, you know, we said everything we said and everything, I just get the feeling that some people just cannot go to that level. They've got like a, you know, like a mental block, because as I say when I talk about this, it really does change everything, because we're looking at something which is totally unconventional, and then you know, you have to start asking, well, who's got this technology? You know, I mean, my response to finding this out and realizing this after it had percolated down into my being, really, is I actually wrote to all the police chiefs in the UK, and I wrote to a load of Royal Air Force bases to tell them, you know, what you've just said, and ask those same questions. How the hell can this happen?
Hold on just a second. You know? We'll be back in just a minute. Hear the music. We'll be back in a second. Stay tuned. Well, we're back from break here. Got Andrew Johnson out of the UK talking about 911, and the ramifications of 911 are so phenomenal. Who has this power? Who's in control? They could do it again. They could control what? We just threatened we're going to blow up the White House. We're going to blow up the Vatican. I don't know. This is just absolutely astounding. And when you look at all of these questions, and if Dr. Judy Wood and along with Andrew Johnson, they put this into a court, they brought the evidence forward, the people had a chance to come out and say they're wrong. They didn't. They were, where is all this thermite stuff? Goes clear to the Supreme Court of the United States, and nobody will touch it. Too hot to handle. Where's the media? Too hot to handle. Where's the myths and disinformation all over the internet? Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think it's worth bringing up a couple of other things why, you know, I say to people, there are two reasons why I know that this is correct. And I know that Dr. Wood is absolutely right in what she says. The first reason is the evidence that we've already touched on. And there's a lot more if you go to drjudywood.com and look at all the videos and stuff that are posted there. The second is the reaction to the evidence. Now, you know, I've had to write this book or compile a book, which is called 9/11 Finding the Truth. And again, you can download that from checktheevidence.com. You can download it for free. It's a PDF file. If you don't want to read it off the screen, I've also now created an audio book of it using a sort of synthesized computer voice. It's quite a good computer voice, but that's a large download, but it's free. You can also get a paperback version from lulu.com. All the links are on there. You can read the reviews and stuff. But really, that book essentially documents the reaction to what we've just talked about. And it looks a little bit at, you know, some of the behind the scenes of Stephen E. Jones and this sort of thing. And I recommend that people read that to realize why what we're saying about the Hutchinson effect and the energy connection is the truth. It is correct. You know, you can only take my word for it on air, but if you study the evidence, I would challenge you not to come to the same conclusion that I have. And another example is this Jim Fetzer character, who was a well-known researcher into the Kennedy assassination. Basically, he says in an email, you know, if Dr. Wood doesn't dissociate herself from John Hutchinson, then I'm going to trash her reputation. That's essentially what he says in email, and this is what he then proceeded to do, and he is still doing it. And he also achieved some publicity recently with this new blog he posted, where he reposted a lot of these photographs that Dr. Wood had posted for several years, and then he didn't mention her name and he didn't include a link to her website, and yet he claims, you know, that he's a supporter of hers. And in this blog he conspicuously misses out the Hutchinson effect references and the Hurricane Erin references. Similarly, we had this episode, unfortunately, with this Alfred Weber character. Now, I'd come into contact with Alfred Weber through the Disclosure Project, which is to do with the UFO stuff. And he interviewed Dr. Judy Wood and John Hutchinson at his home in February 2008. It's February the 14th, and we have an audio recording of this interview. And he was very, very interested in the relationship between 9/11 and the Hutchinson effect. But then, in November of that year, he did an interview with this supposed geoscientist. Maybe she really is a geoscientist. I'm really not sure from the way that she describes things, called Lorraine Murray. And they together claimed that HAARP destroyed the World Trade Center. And in that interview, I think the total length of the interview is about 2 or 3 hours. I've got this all written up in an article with transcripts and audio clips and everything, so you can actually listen to these clips and what they actually say. But they basically say that HAARP destroyed the World Trade Center. They don't mention the Hutchinson effect. They don't mention Hurricane Erin. And they even try not to mention Dr. Judy Wood. And Alfred Weber actually says in this interview, he says, now, Lorraine, without mentioning Judy Wood, please tell me why you think HAARP destroyed the World Trade Center. That's what he actually says, almost word for word, which is very, very strange. And if I may just dwell on that a little moment longer, because I had a very troubling experience with this research in terms of the reaction to it. I spoke at a conference here in England in June. And I met a chap called Richard Dolan there. Now, Richard Dolan has written two books about the UFO subject called UFOs and the National Security State, which catalogue the cover-up of the UFO issue between 1947 and the present day. Now, I'd listened to Richard Dolan on, you know, Coast to Coast and these other talk shows, and I very much enjoyed listening to him. He was very articulate. And he came to speak at this conference in England as well about the UFO subject. And, you know, I was very pleased to meet him, and I actually bought him lunch. You know, we were in Leeds, which is a city in the north of England, and I enjoyed his company. And, you know, he's got a teenage son, and I've got son and a daughter who are not far off being teenage. And we had quite a bit in common, actually, and we had a good laugh, and we talked about the Star Trek film. And, Richard Dolan lives in New York State, so I told him about the hurricane. I printed out some pages because I knew I was going to meet him. I put the pages in his hand. I told him about Dr. Wood's legal case. I told him about the Hutchinson effect. I told him all that stuff. And I told him about Alfred Weber, the story that I've just told you. Now, I shook hands with him. We went off back to the States, and that was in June. And then I was alerted to a podcast that he'd posted, which was posted on the anniversary, in other words, September the 11th, 2009. And my friend said, I listened to Richard Dolan, and he was talking about thermite. I thought, he wasn't talking about thermite, surely not. And so I went and downloaded this podcast, and it's still available. You can go and listen to it yourselves. And I listened to it very carefully. It's 77 minutes long, I think. Listened to the whole thing very, very carefully, and sure enough, he mentions nanothermite in this scientific paper that's been, written, and how credible it was and wonderful. And he didn't even mention at all anything that I'd told him. He didn't mention the Hutchinson effect. He didn't mention Dr. Judy Wood. He didn't mention Hurricane Erin. He didn't mention meeting with me. Nothing at all about anything that we'd spoken about. Frankly, I was shocked, because, as we said a few minutes ago, some of this stuff is very difficult to take in, and it really does challenge you on any number of levels. But if to me, an honest person would say, well, look, I've heard about the thermite, and I think that explains it, but there is this other evidence. I'm not sure I believe it, but it's really interesting, and you should go and look at it and see what you think. That you should look at about the directed energy weapons, and there was this hurricane as well. I'm not sure how that fits into the picture, but boy, that is really strange. He didn't say any of that, none of that. Uh-huh. And that's, for somebody who's researching the UFO topic, which is obviously very, very controversial, and obviously you attract ridicule by talking about that subject automatically. So surely we can't apply the ridicule idea to Richard Dolan as to talking about the stuff that we've just talked about. So why didn't he talk about it? Why didn't he even mention it? Again, I've written all this up into an article to describe all the circumstances to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. So it really did. That's when I'm thinking, and I actually put in there that this thermite thing seems like a global program, that's been running and put into people's brains. It's almost like a computer virus. It's really strange. And that's been our experience. And then we've had other people in this book that I wrote about who've tried. Somebody actually offered to send me $5,000 if I could get a successful conviction over a 9/11 court case. And this is just some guy. They offered me $5,000. I mean, how am I going to get this? I don't have any control over the courts. No. I'm not so naive as to think that the courts are going to just sort of say, oh, yes, of course, Dr. Judy Woods, she's put all the evidence. We're totally convinced by this. Yes, directed energy weapons did it, and we'll rule in her favor. And, these companies, they'll have to pay this, the money back. Of course, they're not going to do that. No. We have to try to actually do something within the bounds of the law. But are we going to get the result we want? My view was always probably not. Not definitely not, probably not. That was always my view. But nevertheless, we have to do something. We have to take this action. We have to try and show people that we are serious, and that the evidence, as we see it, would stand up in a court of law. And we have to take it as far as we can, which is what we've done. And then for doing that, we just get attacked. Nobody will speak about the court case. In 2008, I asked a fellow 9/11 researcher in the UK. I said to her, you go around the UK, you talk about 9/11, please, you know, can you at least mention the court case of Dr. Judy Wood, that something is actually going on? We are making legal challenges. You know, I don't need you to talk about the directed energy weapons, because I know it can get quite complicated for some people and difficult to accept. But can you say that these U.S. professors have challenged NIST in a court, you know, over the 9/11 reports? That was basically what I asked her, and she refused. She says, no, I won't talk about it. I won't even talk about it. She refused point blank. So this really showed me that this second level of cover-up was, it was deliberate. It wasn't just down to ego, credibility of people, you know, not wanting to actually look stupid. To me, it was saying, no, we can't let this come out, because to me, this is game over. You know, this changes everything. It changes the whole socio-political economic system of the whole world once this stuff is out there and people understand what's happened. When people see that the weather was controlled on 9/11, I mean, that's global warming out of the window. It's already out the window anyway, but, you know, when people see that we can have energy, as much energy as we need for nothing, that just changes everything completely.
Mm-hmm. Hold on just a minute. The music's coming up. Back in a minute. This was just... Back in a minute. Shocking. Well, we're back here talking with Andrew Johnson out of the UK and the directed energy weapons and 911. What I'm seeing here, and it just happens over and over on any issues, on all of these major important issues. Number one, if we got truthers out there, why don't they go after the facts and then try to establish, once all these facts are established, what circumstance, what could explain those facts? They don't do that. What they do is they attack the messenger and try to splatter the messenger, that the messenger is bad or the messenger this or some nonsense. How many of them have taken the evidence to a court and say, here it is, and where were you? Come on down. Tell me your story. Shh, can't talk about it. Why is that? Because the fix is in. This is so big about all of the powers. And what is it? That's the part that really astounds me. What do they do to these people to keep their lips sealed or to get them to give cover stories? I don't know. What do they do to them? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I found myself thinking the same thing. And, you know, you do wonder where it ends. And, you know, to think that there is a cover-up within a cover-up, and to think that the truth movement and most of the people in it are, you know, are just involved with managing it, and you know, we've got this phrase of perception management, which I think is, you know, is accurate. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also another, you know, bit of human psychology, and somebody sent me a really good quote. I don't know if you've heard this, and it's from Don Markey or Don Marquis. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's basically, if people think you're making them think, they will like you. But if you really make them think, they will hate you. And I think there is an element of that in all of this, because, you know, a lot of people feel comfortable that, you know, they can explain and understand what's going on in the world. And, you know, and then something like this comes along and they're completely thrown out of, you know, any sort of sense of, you know, knowing what's going on, really. Uh-huh. I mean, and I think also, you know, your point about, you know, not going after the facts. I mean, we're seeing a lot of talk about HAARP now, and that's really causing, I think, a lot of trouble in getting accurate information out, in terms of, you know, we've had these terrible, terrible earthquakes in Haiti and you know, in Chile now, you know, and who'd have thought, you know, would have seen sort of two sort of major earthquakes in what, a month apart or something. And it is very, very troubling, whatever the reason, you know, whether they're natural or whether they are indeed caused by some tectonic weapons. Very, very troubling. And I think, you know, there are some interesting bits to look at in terms of the Chile one being politically timed, because they, I think, had tried to form some South American alliance or something a few weeks ago. And if you look at the damage to Haiti, it's very focused on Port-au-Prince and virtually nothing in the Dominican Republic and this sort of thing. So, you know, some very, very strange things going on, but people are jumping on the bandwagon and saying, harp, 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 harp. And we have to be very careful, because you know, if you can actually go and look at the patent for HARP and the technology that it's based on, and it's not based on Tesla technology, for example, as some people are claiming. The patent for HARP is owned by Bernard Eastland, and he's still alive, you know, and he's been on various documentaries talking about what HARP can do. And so the picture of what HARP can do is very confused. But to me, if it was just a public facility, which is, you know, wide open, you can fly over it in a plane, you know where it is, it would just be too obvious that was doing any sort of anything major. The people who are working in there, which are just regular government employees, you know, working in for the University of Alaska in the Department of Defense, they would see something of what's going on. And you know, what I can say is that if you look at the traces around the time of the Haiti quake, some people are saying that this is very suspicious, but the evidence itself is only circumstantial. We've only really got one piece of evidence, and it doesn't really tie up that well. So we have to be very careful when we're talking about things like HARP, and a lot of people are talking about it. And I just think it could be just a big distraction, really, because I think there is other technology which is hidden away, and I think that the field effect technology that we're talking about, if you look at how the World Trade Center was destroyed, we know from just looking at that is truly devastating. We've never seen anything like that in public view before. You know, there may have been some tests off in the outback of Australia somewhere, and again, if you go and look at a series called Bright Skies, which is on Tom Bearden's website, that will give you some interesting information about possible other weaponry. So, you know, we're getting a lot of talk about HARP. The other thing which we had a lot of talk about with these photos that came out from ABC, they claimed that these photos of 9/11 were new, and they showed the destruction of the World Trade Center, you know, in unparalleled detail. Of course, ABC had never looked at Dr. Judy Wood's website, where these photos had been hosted for 3 years. So their claim that these were new photographs released under an FOI is just a total pack of lies, you know. Uh-huh. And then we had another problem as well, because the popular show Coast to Coast, they posted this ABC story on their website. And I wrote to them. I've written to them several times. One of my friends actually spoke to George Noory in April 2008 at the X conference and said, George, you know, I think you should have Dr. Judy Wood on your program. And he said at that time, maybe we will. So we wrote to him and asked him to have her on. And then they said they were going to have her on September the 7th, and then she was cancelled. And then, I can probably just get this in before the break, they had Richard Gage on the 18th, and that was after I'd asked them to have Judy Wood on to talk about these pictures.
Hold on just a minute. I heard the break here. This is back in a minute.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Okay. Hello. We appear to have lost Ralph. So we're not sure what's happened. So I'm going to continue just with chatting as best I can. So thank you for listening to those people that are listening. We were talking about how the sort of 9/11 cover-up is working, and we appear to, you know, have a lot of people trying to muddy the waters and essentially divert people onto other things which are not truthful. And, you know, Dr. Wood and I have experienced this such a lot in the last sort of 3 years. We really have had so many attacks that it's been actually quite difficult to actually get any research done at times, and I'm pretty amazed that Dr. Wood has actually managed to find out all these things in the face of all the obstacles that have been put in her way, really. Ralph's back with us now.
I am, yeah. The internet just closed up and went away.
Oh, okay.
At least
it came back again.
Yes.
So, I think, you know, we can both see now, and it does take a while to take this picture in, that we've got, you know, such a lot of people working to cover up, you know, what the actual truth is. And, you know, when you get close to it, you get, you know, the phrase, the flak is strongest when you're over the target. And I think, you know, we've seen on multiple occasions that Dr. Wood and, you know, Morgan Reynolds, who's talked about the, you know, the lack of planes at the World Trade Center, which is another big sticking point for people, you know, that they've been attacked most of all. You know, and I've sort of been more of an assistant than a, you know, I haven't done that much original research, really. I'm not ashamed to admit that. I've only done a bit of original research in this area. Although, if, you know, if you wanted, we could talk about the link to the crop circle phenomenon as well, which I think is
yeah, I'd like to do that. I got one caller here. Let me
Sure.
A quick comment, Mark in Nevada. Thanks for you got a question or comment on
yes,
point.
Yes, I certainly do, Ralph. You and Andrew are just getting absolutely more and more enthralling with every week that goes by. There's one person that's got personal first-hand knowledge that I believe both of you know who he is when his name is mentioned, that did a complete expose on this on True Channel 54, and that's Governor Jesse Ventura. The Navy SEAL, and this man is the only man in this country I have trust in anything with. He went
okay,
up.
Do you have a question or comment? Because we got another subject we want to cover too here.
Harp, if you know anything about it, okay. It was all designed under the guise of studying the weather patterns. He went up there and he investigated the whole thing. And tried to get people's interest. Also, he went to the secured facility where they're keeping the metal beams and everything from the world.
Okay, so what your question is HAARP involved in this?
Absolutely, it's involved in it. As he proved and showed that weapon is capable of taking out missiles, satellites, death rays, and total destruction. And for anybody that wants to look at it, go up to YouTube, just plug in, just Google in conspiracy theories, and watch the first two issues.
Okay, well, we'll get around and take a look at that on YouTube. But thanks for calling. I appreciate that. Just go ahead, Andrew, with any information. Is there any validity to crop circles, that any evidence that they suggest?
Oh, definitely, yes. I'd say that without doubt. I'll just briefly come back on the Jesse Ventura thing. I mean, I haven't watched the HAARP program, but again, I think that's fairly typical of the claims that are made. And I'm not really sure what the limits of HAARP's capability are. And I think there's a lot of scaremongering being put out about it. And I think that does take off the attention from this black technology, which is undisclosed, and we don't know where it is. But we know from 9/11 that it's real. And Jesse Ventura on another program about 9/11, yes, he did indeed go to the find the beams at the World Trade Center. But if you look at that program, again, it promotes thermite, unfortunately. And we did try and get in touch with Jesse Ventura well over a year ago to advise him, because when he started speaking out on Fox, I think there was another guy in the States that we know who'd been working with us, and he tried to get in touch with Jesse Ventura, and I believe that I think you know Sheldon, don't you? I think he tried to get in touch with Jesse Ventura as well, but we weren't successful. And then he ends up making this conspiracy theory program, or whatever it's called, I forget the title, about thermite. So, you know, we were very disappointed and troubled to hear that, really, because we thought he was a pretty smart guy. But, you know, whether he's deliberately pushing it or whether he's you know, just taken in by it, who can say? But
How about George Norrie too? Why won't he touch this?
Well, you know, again, I was very disappointed with that. I spoke to Lisa Lyon, you know, for quite a lengthy period, explaining all the details. And I, again, you know, I asked them to have Dr. Wood on to explain about those pictures. And then instead, they have this Richard Gage on about these press conferences, about them calling for a new investigation, not actually doing one. That's what troubles me the most, you know. And I think the trouble with Coast to Coast is that there's such a, some of the guests are very, very interesting. I listen to it a lot and I enjoy listening to some of the guests, but there is an awful lot of speculative material on there. So I think somehow they can't really deal with it when they get something that's totally factual, you know. It's just kind of like almost anathema to them. And I think that's part of the problem. Going back to the crop circles, I did a sort of, you know, a bit of research into these 2-3 years ago, and came to the conclusion that there is a real phenomenon behind it all, because of, again, because of the witness testimony, because of the physical evidence, and because of measurements that have been made. And why I wanted to mention them in relation to 9/11 is I think this, strangely, you might think this is a bit strange, but it even ties in to the thermite story, because if you look at what the witnesses say, some witnesses have witnessed crop circles forming within 30 seconds, you know, very complicated formations forming within 30 seconds. We also have a website called bltresearch.com, which takes a scientific approach to actually analysing things like the crops themselves. You know, they'll take a sample of crops, put them under a microscope, and you can see these exploded nodes where the actual stem of the crop is actually, there's like a bubble on it which has burnt out as if some energy has gone into it. And there's one particular study which caught my attention, which was a study of the soil which was underneath where the crop circle had formed. And they took the soil sample, they analysed it, they looked at the crystalline structure using X-ray crystallography, or sorry, X-ray diffraction, I should say. And the report concluded that these soils had been heated to a temperature of 600 degrees centigrade, but the crop on top of those soils was undamaged. It wasn't charred, it wasn't burned, it was still sort of relatively undamaged. So we had evidence of heat in the soil, you know, inches away, no heat. And what does that remind you of? Well, it reminds me of the toasted cars at the World Trade Center, where you've got evidence of heat, you know, on the paint sort of charred and melted, and then 2 inches away, you've got an inflated rubber tire and whatnot, and all the paint's perfectly fine. So we looked at that. I also came across an account of a crop circle researcher called Pat Delgado, and he was in a crop circle in 1989 at midnight, and you know, without reading out the whole account, you can go and read this on Colin Andrews' website, and I've got a YouTube video I made about this. He described being levitated and carried about, you know, sort of 12 feet across the ground, just inches above the ground. So we've got the levitation, we've got the evidence of heat and no heat. And then also one of the other things with the Hutchinson effect is the residual effects. In other words, when you take the energy away, the reaction that is created still carries on, even when there's no energy being input into the system. And that's what happened with the Bankers Trust building, which is still degrading, and that's why they took it down. And when you go and look at some of the crop formations, I've got some pictures by a chap called Busty Taylor, who's a crop circle researcher, and he's taking pictures the next year in the spring when the new crop is growing, and where the new crop is growing, you can still see last year's formation, which is showing residual effects in the soil. So again, that's another point of evidence tying together. The final thing which I found, which I only found a couple of months ago after I watched a video, was that in that same BLT research where they were looking at the soil, they found iron microspheres, in other words, small spheres of iron at 40 microns in diameter, approximately 10 to 40 microns in diameter. And then I remembered, what paper did Steve Jones publish? He published this paper on thermite, and in it he said they discovered iron-rich microspheres in the World Trade Center dust, and the size of those microspheres was, I think, something like 20 microns. So we have iron spheres in the crop circle soils and in the World Trade Center dust, according to the paper that Steve Jones published. He said that was the result of thermite. I don't think he's right. I think the dust test was real. He was testing real dust. But the iron microspheres came from the energy weapon. They're a fingerprint of the weapon. And this weapon, as we know, has effects on gravity, because we're at the World Trade Center, we had witnesses levitated, and we had cars turned upside down, and this sort of thing. So, if you imagine a crop formation being made, the way that people, these hoaxers, will do it, and some of them do it not as a hoax, but for advertising purposes and to make a living, you can go onto a website called circlemakers.com, and if you go and ring them up, send them money and whatnot, and get permission, they'll make you a crop circle. They do it by pressing down with a board on the actual crop, you know, in an organized manner, and they do a design. You know, so what is that? You're using the force of gravity, or, you know, you're weighing down, you're pressing down. So what if you can create an artificial gravity field with energy In other words, you can manipulate gravity. Well, that would be one way to create a crop formation. So that, I think, is what actually, you know, is an offshoot of this technology. The technology that used the Destroy the World Trade Center can be used to control gravity, to change the level of gravity to... technology that's a different mode of operation, and you can actually go and see this YouTube video I made, which will give you a few more details. So I think that the microsphere story was a cover story to say it was thermite, and they did this as well with the fires, because another of the effects that John Hutchison observes in his experiments is these weird fires, okay. Mm-hmm. and you could see, you know, that's why they needed these molten metal stories to say that this was what the fire was, this was the molten metal dripping down, all this sort of thing. But it's actually not, because you can see these hot car fires next to the paper that's not burning. So you've got this unconventional fire. So, again, we're seeing a lot of these data points of evidence tying together, and we're looking at some unusual type of technology which is at work, which we don't know the full details of, but we do know that John Hutchison has reproduced all of these effects that, you know, in his experiments over the last 20 years. And as I may have mentioned before, we also know that Los Alamos National Laboratories know about John's work, because Colonel John Alexander visited John Hutchison in 1983 and spent 4 months with him working at his makeshift lab in Canada. And we've got documents which prove that. And if you listen to Colonel John Alexander, he's again been on this, you know, Coast to Coast and these other programs, he makes no secret of the fact that he visited John Hutchison. He claims that John Hutchison is using what he calls PK, which is psychokinesis, to levitate things. Psychokinesis is the technique whereby you can actually use, you know, your own mind to move objects, you know, and that's what John Alexander has claimed that John Hutchison is doing, and which is just bizarre, you know. So, you know, we know that Los Alamos knows about this technology, and I think they know exactly what it is, and I suspect that when people like Jim Fetzer come out and start attacking Dr. Judy Wood, as soon as she makes the connection to the Hutchison effect, I think he knows what the technology is, or at least he knows somebody, he's in contact with somebody who knows what the technology is and how it was used.
Let me ask you this, Willis, does this technology affect humans, flesh, the same as it does solids like concrete or steel? Or?
Yeah, well, I think it can, because if you look at some of the witness accounts, there's one particular one where some of the first responders are walking through World Trade Center 6, and I think at the same time as that building gets its holes, one of this party just disappears into thin air. So that's what the witness says, you know. So it looks like it can affect people the same as it affects buildings, but I mean, who knows, you know.
Sure.
Can we see a live demonstration? I mean, hopefully not, you know.
Right.
So
have they rebuilt there at the Twin Towers?
I believe not. I think there is a small amount of construction. I'd have to go and check recently. When we were there in 2008, there was no real significant construction. When I recently saw some type of webcam picture, there is a webcam. There did seem to be some type of structure built on there, but it looked sort of like just some fairly superficial structure. It wasn't with glass or anything like that. It was just some kind of framework. So I don't know what that was for, but we do know that they've been trucking in dirt in and out of the site.
Up until
a few months ago, we had pictures of dirt actually piled up at the site, which we think is kind of like a decontamination. Dr. Woods uses this expression of, you know, changing diapers or changing nappies, as we call them here. So you know, the ongoing effects, I think, are still indicating that you know, they can't actually build a new building on the site, not on where the towers were. They've rebuilt World Trade Center 7, now, but even the base of that, the base of the new World Trade Center Tower 7, whatever the name of what's replaced it, that doesn't have any windows in the base. Up to about 4 or 5 stories high, there are no windows in this building. The windows start above that.
Do you have a comment on the magnetic changes that we saw in Alaska and other?
Well, yeah, because that's another signature of some type of energy effect. And the very significant thing, if you look at the trace 4911, Dr. Wood's got this on, if you go on to the Hurricane Erin series, go on to drjudywood.com and click on the Erin study, and then I think it's on page 5, you'll find the Erin study, and you'll
okay,
see this.
Okay, hold that thought just a minute. We'll be right back here. We got one more short segment. Back in a minute. Okay, we're back here, and we only have about 3 minutes or so here to closing. I got 2 callers, and I just give you. We don't have much time, so I just need a real concise question. First is John in Florida. What's your question?
First,
hello.
What's your
question? Because we only got less than 3
buildings.
Minutes.
1 and 2 went down, and they were explosions because the people who were there, the firefighters and the rest of them, they all eyewitnesses reports all testified to explosions. Building 7, Larry Silverstein admitted later on BBC that he called the fire department, or they called him, and he said, pull the building.
Okay, I got that. Thanks for calling. You have any comment before we get the next caller?
Yeah, you should ask yourself whether Larry Silverstein was telling the truth, knowing what else you know about him. I think as the towers came down, you probably won't have heard any explosions. Before the towers came down, yes, you did hear, witnesses did hear explosions. An explosion doesn't equal a bomb. If you put an egg in a microwave oven and heat it up, it will explode, but it's not a bomb. The technology which was at work was weakening the metal. If there were any pressurized tanks which had metal, which were made of metal, such as fire extinguishers, these would have exploded because the metal structure was compromised. Indeed, firefighters reported explosions of Scott packs on the fire trucks outside the building. So again, the evidence for explosions, I think, is perhaps not what people assume it is.
But regardless, it won't explain what happened. We got one more caller. Quick question, Jeff in Chicago. You got a quick question because we got just less than 2 minutes.
Sure. Hey, Mr. Johnson, thank you so much. Listen, you and Ralph, thank you also. You asked why aren't people filing lawsuits where they are individually. I am willing and able to be one of the Chicagoans and one of the Illinoisans that want to file these lawsuits, injunctions. We need to get the word out and file actually lawsuits. I'm a 9/11 truth candidate for public office. You asked why people don't want to look at the no plane issue. There was no fuselage found at the towers. There was no fuselage found at the towers. There were no pancake floors. So you can contact me to get these lawsuits going. Directed energy weapons. Artie Wheeler is a researcher that talks about Tomahawk cruise missiles. Major General Albert Stubblebine has talked about how the plane does not fit in that hole. It all fits together. No big Boeing crashed in a field in Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, we're running out of time, but thanks for your question here because we're just very almost done. You have any short comment before I give you the closing? Go ahead.
Sure. Great. If you can file a lawsuit, fantastic. The documents that Dr. Wood has got on her site, they're all published and you can read them. There may be some useful sort of guidelines in there that you can dig out. I can't really file a lawsuit from this country. If you want to contact me and I can do anything, then I'll try to help in the time that I've got. So, yeah, thanks.
Okay, you got any closing comments? We got probably about a minute left, something like that.
Well, I think it comes down, again, just to looking at the evidence. If you're having problems with anything that I've said, please just check it. Spend time, do the legwork, do the brain work. Don't let anyone else give you your opinion. Go and study the primary evidence. Look at the primary sources. Look at who's smearing whom and what the reason behind that is.
What's your web page?
The website that I have is called CheckTheEvidence, which is all one word, .com. You just Google Check the Evidence and you'll find it. You can put my name in if you want. And the Thermite blog is 911 digits, thermite free, all one word, thermitesleak.blogspot.com. That'll give you all the links to all the thermite stuff. It should enable you to deprogram yourself from thermite if you've been programmed with it.
And then there's Dr. Judy Wood, all one word, .com, right?
Yep, that's got the biggest volume of information on there in terms of the photographic evidence, links to some of the videos, and some of the witness testimony to back all this up. And I think, you know, when Dr. Wood's book comes out, you're going to find a stack of evidence which is as high as the Twin Towers themselves were. So, you know, I think the way that she does things is to kind of, you know, get about 16 different, you know, points of evidence just to back up one point at least, you know, and then if there's 100, she'll put the 100 in. So this is why it's taken us such a long time to actually put this together, because there's such a lot to actually put in. You know, there's a lot of evidence to prove what we're saying is true.
Has an amazing output, yeah, of about a gallon an hour.
Okay, well, okay, thanks, and thanks for everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week. Watch out for the federales. They're everywhere.
On carrying case, the whole kit weighs